60 years ago, a new play electrified Broadway. It was funny, heartwarming, and the music was irresistible. Today, we celebrate the 60th anniversary of The Music Man. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Meredith Willson set out to write a memoir, but he ended up writing an iconic musical instead. The Music Man is loved and frequently performed across the country, but it's particularly loved here in Iowa, home of the fictional River City. This hour, we'll sit in on a Music Man performance at the Des Moines Playhouse, learn more about the man behind the show, and hear about a performance in China. We also want to hear from you. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care including independent living, assisted living, skilled and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. If you grew up in Iowa, chances are good that you have seen, heard, sung, or even performed in The Music Man, this iconic musical written by one of Iowa's favorite sons, Meredith Willson of Mason City, debuted on Broadway 60 years ago. Many Iowa communities are celebrating the anniversary with local performances. Iowa Public Radio producer Ben Stanton visited a Des Moines Playhouse production. Just before the show started, he made his way down the stairs backstage to the green room where the performers were warming up their voices.
We can be cold as a falling
Let's do that one more time, He should have his hands up already. He's going to get one,
Then,
two,
many in the cast check a mirror one more time before heading up the stairs to the backstage area. Some are going on stage for the first scene, while stage manager Annabelle Stroud is calling cues.
Sound cue A standby?
The lights go down and the music starts. Music is coming from even further backstage, where the small orchestra sits. During intermission, they're taking a break.
Hi, my name is Adam Yankovi, and I am currently serving as the pit conductor for The Music Man at the Des Moines Community Playhouse. I really love this show because it's one of those golden age musicals that came out in 1957, that same time as West Side Story, it's in that same line as Rodgers and Hammerstein, and in a very popular time in the musical theater canon. And it screams that. It's very much a classic musical. I think it's very well crafted from a musical standpoint. And they all are. But this one, you can really kind of dissect and see how Meredith Willson kind of crafted the whole thing. It's quite brilliant. Meredith Willson, born in small town Iowa, I think most people claim him as an Iowan. And so he really brought to this story and this score that small town Midwestern feeling that so many people can relate to. And in that, he also brought his experience. He was in the New York Philharmonic. He played with the John Philip Sousa Band. And so he brings in all of this Americana to his score. So you hear a march like 76 trombones, and it sounds like it fits right into that John Philip Sousa canon. And he also is very clever in how he ties and weaves the story together musically. There are motifs that fit. Marion's Goodnight My Someone matches 76 trombones if you listen to her song. And he kind of is foreshadowing that relationship early on. And so the listener, they might not know it, but they hear that, and that helps that story be told unbeknownst to the audience, but then it clicks eventually. Like, they're like, oh, yes.
Good night, my someone, good night.
So if you listen to that opening melodic figure in Goodnight, My Someone and 76 Trombones, it is the same pattern, same note structure. And I just think that that's some of that craft that he put into this. And it's also why I think the Americana feel, I think that's really what this, why this musical has lasted as long as it has. It's homegrown, if you will. It has the happy ending, which I think people want. They like that. That when you know, when West Side Story came out in 1957, that the ending was so dramatic that people were, they didn't know how to react, but this is like happy ending, you know, and so people were real, that is, people tend to like to leave the theater feeling good, not necessarily depressed. So I think that also is just a feel-good musical.
At the end of the show, the cast comes back down the stairs to the green room. As they're going in and out of dressing rooms, they reflect on the performance and the musical itself.
Hi, I'm Brad Church, and I'm playing Harold Hill. This is my third time in Music Man, having played Marcellus the first time, and J.C. Squires, the first tenor of the quartet, the second time. So Harold Hill was the natural progression.
I'm Katie Merriman, and I play Marion Peru. This is my first ever Music Man, but it was the first musical I ever saw when I was a kid. So I've always wanted to do it, and I'm glad to get to do the part. And I've been doing theater since I was a little munchkin in The Wizard of Oz many moons ago in my hometown community theater. The first time I saw The Music Man, I was very young, and it was my first musical, and the thing I remember about it was the kissing on the bridge scene, and I know that I leaned over to someone I was with and said, "Are they married?" Because I couldn't believe that in real life maybe they were just pretending, or I couldn't understand how two people could kiss on stage unless they were wed, I suppose. I don't know. But that's what I remember about my first Music Man.
So I was just out of high school when I played Marcellus. So I was just 18, had just graduated, had never seen the show, but it was the first, it was the opening show of a new theater company in my hometown in Eldridge, Iowa. And I'd never seen Music Man, but I knew all the songs, and you know, being from Iowa, of course, it's iconic. So it was really exciting. I use the word iconic because I don't think that there are many Iowans, whether they're musical theater people or not, that don't know River City, Iowa, and You Got Trouble right here in River City. I mean, I know people from high school who were, you know, the jocks who would say things like, you know, or if a teacher said, "You're in trouble," they'd say, "You got trouble right here in River City." So, I mean, I think it's very iconic in that most people are familiar with The Music Man as a show, whether or not they are experienced theater people or not.
I'm not originally from Iowa, but I can say that I've observed some things from the show that are true about Iowans. I think they are very, very proud of their state and their hometowns and cities, which is a great thing, but it is kind of made fun of a little bit in the show, and I think that's appropriate. But the other thing that's really true is Iowa Nice is a real thing, I would say. I thought that maybe that was just something people said, you know, about their state. And then I moved here and was like, oh no, everyone is actually really, really nice. And that line, "We'll give you our shirt and our back to go with it," I think is actually kind of true. Like, I think if you needed help, an Iowan would give it to you.
I think the show definitely captures Iowa. I mean, there's so many things about Iowa. I mean, you know, she talks about the shirt off our backs. We would do that. But we also can be stubborn, just like the song Iowa Stubborn. It shows like the family values of Mrs. Peru and Marion taking care of her family through the friend of the family that gives her the job at the library. So it's very, you know, I don't want everybody to think that we're all stuffed shirts, and because we're not. But I think it does capture the friendliness of Iowans, the camaraderie of Iowans, and you know, it's a show to be proud of. I mean, it won multiple Tony Awards in 1957 against shows like West Side Story. So, I mean, a show about Iowa winning top honors is pretty cool.
Brad Church and Katie Merriman are Harold Hill and Marion Peru in the Des Moines Playhouse production of The Music Man. They were talking on Sunday after their afternoon performance. There are four performances left of that run. And David Kilpatrick is with us now. He's the executive director of the Des Moines Playhouse, relatively new to the state of Iowa. Hello, David.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, my pleasure.
And this is such a great way to start your career in Iowa. What appeals to you about this show?
Well, A Music Man is one of those very special plays, and I think Brad said it well, is that it does leave you on a happy note. But let's face it, throughout the entire play, you sing a song and you're going to feel better. I mean, years of the school board fighting all the years, and then they start singing a song and we never hate each other again, you know? And the ladies sing about Marion, and then eventually they like Marion and they like the library. So I think it's the specialness of music making all things positive.
Well, and as we were just hearing, I mean, the show pokes fun at Iowa and small town culture in a lot of ways, but it's not mean-spirited satire. I mean, even Meredith Willson described it as a Valentine, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's one of those things that you actually have to love Iowa to be able to appreciate what he's saying. And what he's saying is as much a what outsiders of Iowa would say. But for us insiders in Iowa, and I have been in Iowa before. I lived in the Manna Colonies area. And like Katie said, Iowans are very special. They may have a harsh side to them, but when you touch them and when you need them, they are there and giving you everything they've got.
Well, we are going to take a short break. We are going to spend the rest of the hour, obviously, celebrating the 60th anniversary of The Music Man. And we know that so many people have been involved in performances of this show. If you want to share your memories, what The Music Man means to you, give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'll continue my conversation with David Kilpatrick, executive director of the Des Moines Playhouse, in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled, and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we are celebrating the 60th anniversary of The Music Man, and so many Iowans have memories of this musical. Here's a memory from Leanne Bakro. She's Marketing and Public Relations Director at the Des Moines Community Playhouse.
The first time I saw Music Man, I was 7 years old, and I saw it here at the Des Moines Community Playhouse. It was 1970. Jack Mishler was our Harold Hill, and it was one of those moments that made the hair stand up on the back of my neck, because my grandma and I had been listening to the album for years, and of course it predates videotapes, so I'd never seen the movie. There it was live on stage, and there was a little boy about my age playing Winthrop, and it was so special. It set me on this path with my love for theater.
You can share your memories as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. David Kilpatrick, executive director of the Des Moines Community Playhouse, is here. Their summer performance of The Music Man runs through this weekend. And joining us now is John Skipper. He's a reporter for the Mason City Globe-Gazette and author of Meredith Wilson, The Unsinkable Music Man, published back in 2000. Hello, John.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here and being in Mason City. Meredith Wilson means a lot to a lot of Iowans. In Mason City, he's an even bigger deal, isn't he?
Yeah, he sure is. And his legacy remains. There's a museum here that's called the Music Man Square, and it's a museum and conference center that helps promote his legacy. Interesting, just one real quick interesting tidbit about that. When there was a fund drive for that, Meredith Wilson's widow, Rosemary, who had never lived in Mason City, her only connection was Meredith, pledged a matching grant of $5 million to help build it.
Wow.
And she met that grant and contributed to it even after that. So it was about a $10 million project, and she, who I said never even lived here, contributed $5 million to it. So quite a place, quite a show place for people to visit, incidentally, too.
I think I know that Meredith Wilson did a great deal of work, and he was an incredible composer. The Music Man looms so large, and most of us know it so well. I think that we assume that it kind of says everything there is to know about Meredith Wilson. But tell me a little bit more about this man behind the music, a little bit about his career before the Music Man.
One of the interesting things about Meredith Wilson that I noticed was that he always seemed to associate himself with great people. He was born in Mason City in 1902, and after he graduated from high school, he went to New York and studied at a place called the Institute of Music Art, which now is the Juilliard School of Music. His first job was playing with the John Philip Sousa Band. After that, he played with the New York Philharmonic under Arturo Toscanini. These names may not be familiar with the younger people in your audience, but I'm sure that some of us older folks remember them well. He was a musical director at NBC Radio. And then in 1940, he composed a score for a movie called The Great Dictator. And Charlie Chaplin was the producer of the movie and the star of the movie. And Wilson won an Academy Award nomination for that. And then, so now we've talked so far about John Philip Sousa, Toscanini, Charlie Chaplin. Wilson got into radio and had his own radio show for a while, and then he became a regular on the George Burns and Gracie Allen radio program. They were two very, very famous comedians at the time, and Meredith somehow was their musical director, but he also had a bit part as their next-door neighbor. And in the first show, he had one line. He was to knock on the door and say, "Hi, I'm Meredith Wilson, your new neighbor." But instead, he said, "Hi, I'm Meredith Wilson from Mason City, Iowa, your new neighbor." And of course, the home folks back here just thrilled that the old hometown was mentioned on national radio. And then just a couple other real quick things about him. He became the musical director for a radio program called The Big Show in the late 1940s, and he was asked to write a closing number for it, something that would kind of wrap it all up. And that's when he wrote, "May the Good Lord Bless and Keep You." And then, of course, he got involved with writing The Music Man in the 1950s. And in 1964, when the Beatles made their first American TV appearance on The Ed Sullivan Show, one of the songs that they sang was a Meredith Wilson song. It's a real good trivia question. What Beatles song was written by Meredith Wilson? And the answer is "Till There Was You." And then they sang that on the Sullivan Show.
Wow.
So I guess my point is that
he's a lot bigger than Mason City and the Music Man.
Well, you know, from John Philip Sousa to the Beatles.
Absolutely.
quite a career.
So I've read that the Music Man actually grew out of an effort of his to write his own memoir. Is that a story that you uncovered?
Well, I think it's more that he used Mason City circa 1912 as the backdrop, the backdrop for the show, and he incorporated a lot of Mason City into that. There's a streetscape in the movie where there's one little shop after another, and they're all named after shops that were in Mason City at that time. And in fact, that streetscape, a replica of that streetscape, is in the museum that I mentioned earlier. But I think the overpowering thing in the Music Man that reflects Meredith Willson is the sort of the Midwest values that were incorporated into that. And also there's several examples of those values that show up in the music. I mentioned the "May the Good Lord Bless and Keep You" was not in the Music Man, but there's a line in there that I wanted to share with you, where one of the lines is, "May the Good Lord bless and keep you. Never mind what might have been. May the good Lord bless and keep you till we meet again." The key phrase in there is "never mind what might have been." It's kind of the essence of forgiveness and new hope and new life. And that shows up in the Music Man in many different areas. One is there's a scene in the Music Man where Robert Preston, Professor Harold Hill, is waiting for Marion on the bridge, and he's about ready to bare his soul to her because he's in love with her. And while he's waiting for her on the bridge, he picks up a twig and breaks it. And it's kind of a sign of the past is over with. I'm breaking from it, and we're going to have a new beginning. Now, later on in the play and in the movie, he's in the schoolhouse, and the parents are all upset with him and so on. And Marion is there, and she picks up a pointer, one of these pointers they use for a blackboard, and she breaks it and gives it to him. And that's kind of her symbol of, hey, it's, you know, I'm with you. It's over with, a new beginning. And it's sort of a symbol of transformation, a new beginning, and it shows up in those two different scenes. And then I know I'm going on and on here, but I want to mention one other thing, is when Professor Harold Hill has to fess up to Winthrop, the little boy who just adores him, but the little boy has found out, and he's asking, you know, are you really a professor? No. Did you lie? Yes. Is there really a band? And Harold Hill says, I always think there's a band, kid. And it's kind of the essence of optimism and hope. That even with Harold Hill, he always thinks it's a band. We all should always think that there's a band. And so the transformational power of love, I think, is something that you see in The Music Man and a lot of other Meredith Willson works.
And John, after The Music Man became such a tremendous success, what kind of a relationship did Meredith Willson have with his old hometown?
Well, he came back frequently. The Mason City has an event every year. It's called it used to be the Mason City Band Festival. Now it's the North Iowa Band Festival. And back in its heyday, bands would come from all over the country to participate in it. In 1962, at the band festival, They arranged to have the premiere of The Music Man, not in Hollywood, but in Mason City, Iowa, in conjunction with a band festival. And just to show you how big it was, there was a band from Bossier City, Louisiana, that was the top band in the band festival, and there was about 100 bands participating. It's not quite that big anymore because of travel expenses for schools and school consolidation. And so on. I always tell people that even in Iowa today, Sheffield, Chapin, Missouri, Thornton used to be four bands. Now it's one because of school consolidations. But Meredith Willson, whenever he could work it into his schedule, would come back and participate in the band festival. So here's this world-famous musician who would come and actually march in the band festival with the high school kids. And that's just the type of person he was. He loved that kind of thing.
Well, John, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Sure. My pleasure. Thank you.
John Skipper, he's a reporter for the Mason City Globe-Gazette and author of Meredith Willson, The Unsinkable Music Man. With me still, David Kilpatrick, executive director of the Des Moines Community Playhouse. And David, when you start producing a play, and specifically The Music Man, do you sit down with the cast and talk about the different themes to help them embrace their characters?
Each show is a little bit of its own process. In this particular production, we actually had a director that had joined us from Florida. So our music director got to work with the cast very intimately for a couple of weeks prior to the director showing up. And I know that our music director has a great passion for the music and a great passion for love of singing and instruments and the whole work. So I'm very confident that he shared his stories and his interpretation of what makes the music special and how to best tell the story.
Now, one of the things that is special about The Music Man is that it's a time capsule of sorts, taking us back, of course, to the early part of the 20th century. There's a lot of language in the play that can be a little bit difficult to understand. And here's a moment from the first scene of the 1962 movie adaptation of The Music Man.
Cash for the merchandise, cash for the button hooks, cash for the cotton goods, cash for the hard goods, cash for the fancy goods, cash for the soft goods, cash for the noggins and the piggins and the frickins, cash for the hogshead cask and demijohn, cash for the crackers and the pickles and the fly.
Tony McQuilkin has written a glossary of Music Man terms to help people out when they're learning the play. There were certainly a lot of words that I didn't understand in just that little scene. Hello, Tony.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. Now, what led you to write a glossary of Music Man terms?
Well, for every play I've been in, I've written such a glossary because partly for my own purpose is just to understand things. Like, I really didn't know what a noggin, a piggin, or a firkin was until I started researching that for The Music Man.
Right. Well, and I don't know what a noggin, a piggin, and a firkin are. So help us out here. What's a noggin?
Well, it's a small mug, a cup, or a ladle, and it usually has about a half a pint. And a piggin is a small wooden pail or tub. Typically a cream pail. A firkin is probably the best known. It's actually a unit of volume, about 9 gallons. And because of different professions, they used to have different ones. There was one for beer, one for wine, and I think a different one for whiskey. But it's a unit of volume, or either for dry or wet measurements.
All right, well, it may be better known, but I didn't know it. There were a lot of words, a lot of things included in the Masons, or in River City and in The Music Man, that are these words, these phrases from a long time ago. How long did it take you to research all of them?
Well, actually, some people had already done glossaries like that, and I have posted mine on the web, and I referenced the other ones. Since we had a rehearsal schedule of about 2.5 months, it took me probably about a month to do it all, just in my spare time.
Now, what is one of your favorites that you picked out and learned about with The Music Man?
Oh, it's hard to say. At one point, he's in the song 76 Trombones, just before that, he says five famous band leaders all came to town on the very same historic day. And they were Gilmore, Liberati, Pat Conway, the great creator W.C. Handy, and John Philip Sousa. Now, most people have heard of John Philip Sousa and sort of the father of American bands. But in fact, these others were a little bit earlier. And it turns out that Gilmore died before the great creatore came to the United States, so they couldn't have possibly been on the come to town on the very same day. And W.C. Handy was only 19 years old at the time. So
Harold Hill was using
a
little bit of
hyperbole
there.
There's some anachronisms in the
right.
show.
Although that fits with his character. There's another reference to Dan Patch in one of the songs, one of the scenes. And you did some research about Dan Patch. Tell me about this horse.
Dan Patch, yeah, he was the most famous horse of his time. He was foaled in 1896 in Indiana. And he was a pacer, which means it was a trotting race, but it's different from a trotting in the sense that his legs are moving on the one side at the same time. And he, in the year that the highest paid baseball player, Ty Cobb, was making $12,000 a year, Dan Patch was earning over $1 million.
Wow.
And there's references to Dan Patch in Oklahoma. I can't remember exactly what it is. And you may have heard some cowboy songs that keep a moving Dan. So he's calling his horse Dan after Dan Patch.
Oh, interesting. So you were able to use some of the things you learned researching The Music Man to help you understand other references in popular culture as well.
Well, that's true. Actually, I did Oklahoma several years before we did The Music Man. So I had learned a little bit
All
about
right.
it then.
Nice. Well, Tony, thank you so much for sharing your glossary with us today.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Tony McQuilkin has written a glossary of Music Man terms to help people out when they're learning about the play. He is a teacher of mathematics at Glendale Community College in California, and we'll tweet out a link to his glossary if you're curious about some of these words. We'll continue talking about the Music Man in a moment as we celebrate the 60th anniversary of this musical. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
The heck, you're welcome. Glad to have you with us.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're celebrating the 60th anniversary of The Music Man. It debuted on Broadway 60 years ago. With me this hour, David Kilpatrick. He's executive director of the Des Moines Community Playhouse, where their summer performance of The Music Man runs through this weekend. You are welcome to join the conversation as well with your Music Man memories, your thoughts about the show. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we have this email from Ed in Iowa City. He says, as a 10-year-old farm kid in Iowa, our family traveled to the Schubert Theater in Chicago and saw Forrest Tucker star in The Music Man in 1959. I fell in love with the overture, the orchestra, but especially Amaryllis, played by Debbie Devine, the young piano student in the play. I wrote her a fan letter, and she sent back a lovely letter and photograph. I was totally smitten. That's such a great story. But, David, I think it also speaks to one of the things that keeps this show alive and really attracts so many people is that there is a story there for people of all ages.
Well, that's actually one of the special appeals about this production. Yeah, is it includes performers of every age. So you've got 8-year-olds up to 80-year-olds, and so it can be open to the entire community. And thus, it also gives the audience someone to relate to. There's going to be someone on that stage that's going to be just like them or someone they wish they could be with, and that really makes it a very special appeal.
Well, and I think we were just talking about the glossary and all the lyrics. There are so many clever lyrics in so many of the songs, but they're also something that you understand on a different level at different ages and depending on how much reading you've done, for example. I mean, there are a lot of little nuggets there, too.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, it's one of the neat things that every time you see it, you're going to catch something different. And every time you see it, of course, you're going to be older and there's going to be a different person you're going to relate to and understand. And that's why people keep coming back to The Music Man and they just enjoy it every year.
Dennis is on the line in Cedar Rapids, 866-780-9100. Hi, Dennis.
Hello.
Hi, thanks so much for calling. And you saw the original Music Man on Broadway?
Yes, we did. My father had a sister in New York City, and we visited her. And we saw the High Kickers, the Rockettes, in their theater. And then my aunt said, we're going to be going to a musical. I think you'll be interested because it's centered on River City, Iowa and Mason City. So we went, and I was in my teens at the time, 12 or 13. And a couple of things that I remember, of course, Robert Preston, Hermione Gingold, I believe, was quite a famous character at that time. She was in it. I remember the beautiful barbershop quartet of the Buffalo Bills. And also, I believe at the time, some of the reviews of Music Man were saying, this is cornball stuff and it will never last. Well, it had a pretty good run. And my memories of that in the theater are indelible. And I can go through when I put the CD on, I can go through and sing right along with them every song. So except Shapoopy, that's a little difficult to deal with. But anyhow,
I feel the same way, Dennis.
Yeah, that's a strong memory. That I'm 72 now, but in my memory bank, my memories of the Music Man, they're there now and will be forever, I believe.
Oh, that's so great. And what did that feel like as a kid from Iowa to go to this big show on Broadway and see your home state at the center of it?
I don't think I had an appreciation of that at that time. That appreciation has just grown over the years. And I've gone to Mason City and gone through the Meredith Wilson home and to see some of the artifacts is not the right word, but to continue my appreciation. And yes, Meredith Wilson did, I think his wife's name was Mimi, and they did come back to Mason City several times for the North Iowa Musical Festival. I never saw him march in the parade, but he happened to do that on years maybe that I wasn't up there. So,
well, that's very cool.
It's just something that, as an Iowan, you say that's part of our history and our legacy. So
absolutely,
that's
and
what
Dennis,
I have to offer.
Yeah, Dennis, you might appreciate the glossary that we were just talking about with Tony McQuilkin. The definition of Shapoopy in this glossary is Shapoopy is a word Meredith Wilson just made up. So, on the
that
record,
I didn't know, but. It was a great experience for a teenage boy from Iowa, I can tell you that.
Oh, Dennis, thank you so much for your call. You can call and share your memories, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talks and email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Julie's on the line from Ottumwa. Hi, Julie.
Hi.
Hi, what's your Music Man connection?
Well, my father, who passed away 4 years ago when he was 92, was born in 1921 in Plankington, South Dakota. And his father was a musician, and he sold Baldwin pianos, and he sold Liberace's first Baldwin piano. But he also really loved music, and he went around town, just like in The Music Man, way before The Music Man ever existed, and recruited kids to be in his band, and recruited a large number of them, and they raised money for instruments and uniforms, and they had a band, and he was their director. So we have always thought that the Music Man was really, I never met my grandfather. He passed away when my dad was 9, but we always thought my grandpa must have been quite a deal, and the Music Man, we thought he was the original one, so it was kind of special.
Right,
musical
although
to our family.
He was a genuine music man, not a con man.
That's
right. Oh, Julie, thank you so much for sharing that story. And I mean, David, as you said, there's something that everybody can relate to. And I think that the history within the play, although obviously this is fictional, but the history does help ground the play in our world.
Well, one of the things you talked about is that sometimes people, or it's been mentioned that sometimes people think of the cast or the characters as a bit cornball. And I'm going to say that is if you've never met one. You know, if you're sitting in New York City or Los Angeles or some big city and you say, oh, that small town feeling, that doesn't really exist. And I would disagree and say, come out to Iowa and check it out. So, it is something that is special and real. I do have one quick story to add is about Meredith Willson. Not only did he, of course, visit Mason City, but he actually came to the Playhouse one time and came and saw a show. And we have a picture and a memory of him visiting the Playhouse just to watch a different play that wasn't even Music Man. And we just still think that's special about Meredith being more than just Music Man.
Absolutely. Well, I want to bring somebody else into the conversation now. We've talked about the Music Man being performed all over the country, and you mentioned Canada earlier, David, but George C. White is the founder of the Eugene O'Neill Theater Center, and he directed the very first production of the Music Man in China, and he's on the phone with us now. Hi, George.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Now, how did this come about? Why the Music Man in China?
It's a very good question. In a funny way, we sort of backed up. I had done the play in 1984. I did Anna Christie, and for China, it was done in Chinese, and it was set. We moved the venue from Provincetown, Massachusetts, to Shanghai, 1928. And then, as I said to your colleague, I think I probably had a little too much to drink at the embassy party after, and they said, now would you do an American too? In a weak moment, I guess.
So you said, I'll do an American musical, but that the Music Man wasn't the first one that came to mind.
No, I thought, well, since I moved the venue to Shanghai for Anna Christie, I wanted to do something quintessentially American, so I thought, oh, Oklahoma. So then when the Chinese came to visit me here in Connecticut, in Waterford, Connecticut, I said, are you all set to do that? He said, well, no. We've decided not to do that. We've decided to do Fiddler on the Roof. And I said, well, that's not really what I want to do because I want to do something really quintessentially American. Why don't you want to do Oklahoma? And they said, well, we saw the movie, and we saw that you have to sing and dance at the same time, and we don't think we can do that. So, okay. So anyway, I said, how about, because I always loved Music Man. I said, how about Music Man? And they said, well, I guess so, because they couldn't check it out with the movie. And so we decided on Music Man. That's how it came about. And they also wanted me to do the Fantastics as well as a companion piece to Tour China. But I said, I can't direct both. So I'll do with the Central Opera of Beijing, I will do Music Man. And that was a thrill for me because I always loved the show tremendously.
So you translated, you had someone translate the
yes,
Music Man into Chinese?
Yes, I did indeed. Translated it into Chinese. Woman Shu Ma Fang Julian River City. We've got trouble here in River City. Or Shu Shi Liu Trombones, 76 Trombones, all this stuff. And so, but I was glad I did that because we were supported by both American Express and the State Department. And it was, you know, so it was, there's a lot riding on it in terms of U.S.-Chinese relationships in those days in 1987.
Was there anything that really didn't translate?
But the interesting thing, I had a guardian angel and something told me, you know, you'd better get it, once the translation was done, it was done at the University of Minnesota, translated back into English so I could see how they translated it. And I'm glad I did because, you know, a Trouble in River City and it came out, are your kids mainlining heroin in the parking lot? Are you shooting? Wait, whoa, stop. So I dug that out. Thank God. I had, a guardian angel that said, look, have it. And that was about the only thing. But so having it translated back into English was a saving grace as far as I was concerned.
Absolutely. How was it received by audiences?
They loved it. And it was interesting because it was 2 years before Tiananmen Square, and we had a lot of young people as well as the Politburo, and I had been criticized in the China Daily for doing an American musical in China. Why not a Chinese musical? Well, the truth is there was no Chinese musical anyway, and so I said, okay, I'll fix that. And the Chinese had invited the first selectman of Waterford, Connecticut, and they didn't know Waterford from Cincinnati. So as far as they were concerned, he was a big town mayor in our little town of 18,000 here. So he came, and when he was coming out, I said, bring me 40 handheld American flags, which he did. And we made the 76 trombones number the biggest flag-waving American celebration you ever saw. And the young people in the audience stood up and cheered, which was really kind of, and the Politburo sat there stone-faced. They were not amused at all that.
Wow.
Which was anticipatory to the, obviously, to what went on with Tiananmen Square later on.
So this was back in, what, 1987?
87, exactly. Yeah. And and we had, you know, there were a lot of, there were a lot of funny things. It was you know, terrifying. I had been terrified when I did Anna Christie there. And, of course, the thing was all done in Chinese. And, there were some funny moments. I was saying that there's that moment where the kid comes out of the pool hall and says good morning to the mayor. And, of course, it's 110 in the shade, and the mayor says, it would be a good morning if you could walk around in your BVDs. Well, I mean, this is in Chinese, but anyway, so we're running it through, and the kid comes out of the pool hall. He says, Xiao Shun Hong, Chu Zhang, good morning, Mr. Mayor. And the mayor says, good morning, and walks on. I said, whoa, stop. You missed the line. They said, no. I said, yeah, you did. What about the line about it would be a good morning if you could walk around in your BVDs? And they started to blush. I said, what's the trouble here? You can't say BVDs in China? Because I've been with Anna Christie, you couldn't say kiss. And they said, oh, we can't say that. I said, you can't say underwear?
So it was just too racy.
They said it's underwear. I said, yeah, it's a kind of underwear. Oh, they said, we thought it meant private parts.
Oh. So racier than it was originally intended.
Yeah, right, exactly.
All right, George, thank you so much for sharing that with us today.
Well, it was great. And Meredith Wilson, I just wish she'd done more. She didn't know enough musicals. She was great.
Well, we're grateful for this one, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
George White, founder of the Eugene O'Neill Theater Center, director of The Music Man in China in 1987. We have a lot of people who want to share their memories. This one from Anne Marie on Twitter. She says, I have fond memories of performing The Music Man at the Des Moines Community Playhouse years ago. My first kiss was backstage, which is a wonderful memory. And we'll try to fit in another caller here. Kayleen is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Kayleen.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I just real quick, this is so funny because just last night I heard the story, but again, many times about how in the early 70s my husband came over to Iowa City to see The Music Man at Hampshire or at the university. And at the end, and Meredith Wilson was in the audience.
Oh, wow.
And at the very end of the show, the University of Iowa Hawkeye Marching Band came in doing 76 trombones.
That must have been quite a moment.
It has left a big impact on him and a big memory. And what's funny is that he just ran into somebody the other day who was in the band, and they got to share that memory again. So.
Oh, how cool. Well, Kayleen, thank you so much
for calling. Bye.
Thanks a lot. And we're nearly out of time. But David, now you've got four more shows left at the Des Moines Community Playhouse. When somebody sees The Music Man, what do you hope they take away from the experience?
Oh, I just hope they have a special story that they get to share for the rest of their lives. It's just something that mattered and made them feel good about life in general. And that they'd bring their children the next time, or their grandchildren, or somebody else's children, and share the feelings.
Well, David Kilpatrick, thank you so much for talking with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
David Kilpatrick is the executive director of the Des Moines Community Playhouse. They are in the midst of their run of The Music Man. It runs through this weekend. Many communities around Iowa are performing The Music Man this year in celebration of the 60th anniversary of the play. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.
Till there was you.